Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and of course for the next hour they're going to be the views of, well, two of our, one of the guests and the other is a good friend of ours, Kirk McKenzie. But we're going to be talking to Rex Cazilio, and Rex, of course, lives up very close to where one of the dams on the Klamath River is going to be taken out. Now, most people don't know about the Klamath River. They don't really know what's going on up in that area, but this is a gross abuse of, course, government power. And certainly, it is an effort to destroy the agricultural base of this part of the country, as they've intentionally and purposely and maliciously destroyed the agriculture in a great deal of the Central Valley of California. And you must understand that there really are evil people out there who hate humanity, who want, of course, to destroy this country. They want to destroy the agricultural industry and to shift agriculture to other areas. Do you realize that the trade deficit for the United States for this last year was $690 billion. That's almost three-quarters of $1 trillion. That's more than that's five times as much as the next largest country that trade deficit. It's which I think was Great Britain, five or six times that. But basically, the whole idea is to transfer America's wealth to other nations. They know what they're doing. They want to destroy this nation. That's why they took down our tariffs. That's why they reward companies for moving overseas. That is why, of course, they're in the process of destroying the value of our currency by flooding us with money, which is only going to destroy the savings of our people. But up there, certainly, at Klamath River, they're going to be pulling out dams. Why are they going to pull out dams? Well, dams were put in to prevent floods. They were put in so that there could be water for irrigation. The dams were certainly put in so that there could be a stable income up there. And, of course, it has nothing to do with the fish. The fish don't go up this far, up above the upper Klamath to spawn. They spawn at the lower part. And this is going to have a terrible impact on fishing there as well. But, of course, they justify what they're doing. Oh, we want to protect the fishies. So, certainly, Rex, thank you so very much for being with us this evening.
Well, it's my pleasure. Good evening.
Well, why don't you tell us, our listeners, just a little bit about who you are and why you are so upset and concerned about this plan to take out the four dams on the Klamath River.
I'd be happy to try. Obviously, I'm not a public speaker, but I'm extremely concerned about this, and we've been fighting it against this movement for years. I'm one of four generations living at the same location on, in, and with the Klamath, at a location that's considered the focal point of dams impact. We live directly below where the dams now exist before and after Iron Gate, which is the last dam in the very close chain.
And it's called the Iron Gate. The dam is called the Iron Gate. And how long has that dam been there?
That actually is the most recent dam that was put in place. That was put in it was completed about 1962.
All right, fine. So it's been there 50 years. So, and the others have been there for a lot longer, and they're just vitally important for the economy of that area. And without that, of course, it will destroy agriculture. So basically, why are they going to take the four dams out on the Klamath River?
Well, ostensibly, their excuse is for protecting the and increasing the salmon habitat. Unfortunately, where the project in 1905, they did the project. The Klamath River is an inverted system. It's a very
hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here. All right, Rex, you were saying the Klamath River is an inverted river. What do you mean by that?
It's a very atypical river, and it goes against the boilerplate concept that most people in the agencies have. The entire upper portion of the river exists in a high desert, semi-arid area, and it's the lower coastal portion that has the salmon-conducive water quality and conditions. It actually goes until you reach the coastal range where they have the higher rainfall and the colder, cleaner mountainous waters to the waters are they conducive for the salmon. The upper area where we reside and above are typically warm water locations. They have, in fact, the entire amount of the water coming through Iron Gate, which is right directly above us, amounts to less than 15% of the water that goes to the estuary on the coast. All of this controversy is over that area, and that area is typically, historically, in the upper Klamath Basin far above us, were widespread marshes that were contaminated by volcanic soils with phosphorus, and as a consequence, that fed the algae, which contaminated water, also had geothermal incursions, which made the water largely toxic for most all of the explorers that went through. We have there's written documentation, the history, the experience by the people. The area up above was extremely hostile, disease-ridden, and conducive for the mosquitoes at the time. There was a project done in 1905 to try, and it was approved in 1902 and begun in 1905, called the Upper Basin Project, which was to consolidate the waters to try and conserve the water that were evaporating and being absorbed into the ground and being contaminated by the algae and disease conditions. They condensed them into the reserves, wildlife preserve, an area that was conserved was used for agriculture with the rich soils that were rich and naturally rich in the phosphorus, which is actually unusual throughout the nation. The project was an extreme success, and in addition to that, the Upper Klamath, the part that goes through our area, used to go dry pre-project almost every year in the late summer. By doing the project, they actually took what was a closed system of the Lost River and
hold that thought. Hold that thought. Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess it's Rex Cozzilio, and he's just telling us the history of this area. Now, the Klamath River, the upper part, is certainly in a very, very dry area, and certainly 100 years ago, it was marshy, very toxic, and certainly nothing much would grow there. The soil was very rich in phosphorus, but there was so much toxicity to the soil, they set up a series of dams to try to conserve the water and then to really change the demographics of what they did, and by putting in the four dams, they were actually able to have tremendous success. By putting in the dams, they were actually able to turn some of these arid areas into rich farmland, and of course people have been living there for 75, 100 years farming in that area, and certainly this had nothing to do with the fish. The fish are certainly out towards the coast. They do not spawn in the hot water, the warm water of this area, but these projects, the dams certainly were there, and they were of course there, number one, to prevent flooding, and number two, so that there'd be adequate water year-round, which, of course, well, they were able then by having the dams there to have water year-round and actually to stimulate growth and agriculture in that area. Would that be a fair appraisal, Rex?
Absolutely.
You pick up the story then.
Yeah. In fact, one of the reasons that they chose the location of Kapka Lake is that during the project, they made an agreement with them in for putting in the lake and the power generation that would be allowed. That supported the project, which added water from the Lost River as well, balanced the water usage, increased the levels in Upper Klamath Lake, and allowed water to flow in the Klamath through our region that historically in late summer would go subsurface. They chose Kapka Lake in large part because salmon were never known to go above, immediately above where Kapka Copco Lake is now located for two reasons. One of them is for degraded water quality because of the local conditions at the time, and also because of natural impediments that existed at the time. There was the Keno Reef and other obstacles that the salmon were never known to get above in numbers. Certainly not any numbers that could support their were known to support their supposed contribution to the salmon fisheries, and they would encounter the very poor water quality up above there in the intermediate area. It'd be very difficult for them to get past. As a consequence, it improved where our location is. Now, I'm in the water over 50 times a year for over 50 years, as my grandfather before me, and that's conservative. We're there and remain there largely because of the love of the Klamath and the community. If environmentally we felt it was going to improve things by doing this, I wouldn't be speaking on the phone right now. The problem is I saw the conditions myself before Iron Gate went in. We would have the other dams were not adequate by themselves to mitigate the annual flood damage that regularly occurred. They say now, at the time, they extolled the virtues of the flood protection from the dam. Now they're claiming that, they provide no capacity for flood protection. We experienced it. We know it. Now the engineering has come out through the other side. While they denied that was the case, now the engineering has come out where they said, oh, yes, it does affect, it attenuates the water increase, which is exactly what we have been claiming from the beginning. But now that the authority is being assumed, now that the progress has been made towards achieving their goal, now they're simply saying, well, but we consider that has little effect. We have seen from our location, since Iron Gate had gone in and the other dams before, our water quality, the riparian stability, the habitat, the environmental conditions have all been greatly improved over what they were before. That's on our personal experience. That's through our historical connections with people who lived in the area, both tribal and immigrants from the mid-1800s.
Now, basically, of course, I'm told that the Indians want to take out the dams. Is this true? Is that the Indians are siding with the government that they want to take out the dams? And why would they want to take out the dams? And the second thing is, of course, what will happen to where you live? Well, of course, will the flooding bother you? And what about the loss of electricity? I mean, the loss of hydroelectricity. I said right now we're told, oh, my goodness, you know, electricity is going to go up. It's so expensive to produce. You know, we can't have the carbon footprint, we can't burn fossil fuels, we can't have nuclear energy, we can't have dams all across America. They're tearing out dams all across America. They're talking about having to shut down nuclear energy all across America. They're saying, oh, we can't use fossil fuels. It's almost as if they want to stop the use of electricity in our society. Oh, we're gonna be able to compensate for it with windmills and solar farms. But basically, it'll be three times as expensive. And then what do you do when it's overcast? There's no sunlight. What do you do at nighttime? What do you do when the sun doesn't blow? What they're gonna do is make electricity so expensive, they're going to destroy the industrial society we have. You have to have power to have an industrial society. So, first of all, what will happen to you? Do you have a farm down there? Will you be affected by the flooding? What about the lack of water?
Oh, absolutely. The potential effects, the known effects, and the potential effects are incredible. The avulsion and accretion of the land area, we're basalt soil, which is a clay soil there. That means, which is why we would have pre-Iron Gate so much damage almost every year, because the soil, as my grandfather used to call it, is brown water when it's saturated. It has no stability. So when the water would increase extremely quickly, the vegetation on the area could not adapt to it quickly enough, the soil would lose its stability, and it would take the riparian, the trees and the vegetation out, form a battering ram, and take out everything in its path all the way down, which meant that it opened up and exposed all of those basalt soils, the adobe-type soils in our area, magnesium-based, that allowed massive erosion, sediment, changes at the banks and in the channels, all things which they decried, still claim that they decried, but by removing the dams are going to return to those conditions that have been vastly improved since the dams were put in.
Well, now, what happens when they take those dams out? Isn't there a lot of silt behind them? Won't that silt flow down the river and something contaminate the river and the river banks and even the places where the salmon spawn?
Oh, even their most conservative estimates that they're saying as well as only 20 million cubic yards that they're expecting to put down. They fully expect all the excuses for removing the dams are actually going to endanger the very precepts that they're using to justify dams removal. They fully expect and anticipate the possibility that they will extirpate the salmon from the sediment. All it takes is 3 to 5 years. The salmon, the so-called wild salmon, which is a misnomer anyway in our region, will be wiped out. They're saying they have to take out dams to restore wild salmon and to reintroduce them into an area that historically they were never known to exist in numbers. In order to do that, they're already selecting species, Fish and Wildlife is, from this and other watersheds. That's their quote. In order to try and put back in the river in the upper area, because they know that the salmon will not survive that kind of track as we know it.
In other words, basically, this is all going to be done because they want to protect the salmon, knowing full well they're going to destroy the salmon. Would that be a fair statement?
That's very fair. From my understanding of everything that we've been working with, both of those conditions exist at the same time, which are totally contradictory to each other, but which to me show that that's not the objective. Salmon and fisheries are not the objective.
What is the objective then?
To be honest, the only thing that I can rationally conclude is it's resource control. What happens in conjunction with dams removal is part of their plan, the so-called agreements that have been put into place, which is the Klamath Basin Restoration Agreement and its related and tied Klamath Hydroelectric Settlement Agreement, were created in large part by a group of primarily non-vested interests, 26 that were signing on it, comprised of federal and state agencies, environmental groups, and a few tribal councils they brought in order to that would comply in exchange for benefit, and the so-called agriculture they claim is a unified community effort represents less than 10% of agriculture in the region. And that agriculture that sat at the table agreed to two conditions that in order to get guarantees of water. And those guarantees primarily are for themselves. So and those conditions are, rather than the equal-based Klamath Basin Compact, which was the original force, where all beneficial uses of the Klamath were basically equal, the new agreement actually creates a hierarchy that's tiered, where it's fish first, tribal allocation second. It was the 10% of agriculture represented third, and then the wildlife preserve fourth. They reversed that, as I understand it, within the last year, where now it's the wildlife is third, and the agriculture 10% is fourth.
Are they going to wipe out the farmers in that area? Is this going to really seriously damage the food production in that area?
Under the coalition of the requirements, the water quality requirements, the plan under the KBRA, and the hierarchy they put in place, I can see no other alternative.
Hold that thought.
Okay.
Rex, you go right ahead.
Thank you. I can see no other alternative in the outcome, because what they're trying to do is introduce boilerplate conditions of ideal pristine water conditions that our area will never achieve. They're introducing requirements for flows that it's never historically been able to attain, and they're trying to introduce restoration, so-called, for salmon that have never been known really to exist. The numbers they throw, the rhetoric that's been put out there, is contradicted over and over again by the experience, the documented history, and now even their more recent studies that they are ignoring in getting this process in place. They don't want that information to be revealed, and I could cite you time after time of things like the effects of the dams on the water temperatures, which was one of the reasons California water quality was going for impairment for sediment temperatures, which they've now proven has very little effect on temperatures, which we were telling them from the beginning. But once they get the authority in place, it appears that those justifications are no longer necessary. They have a new term they use, and that's adaptive management. So that as long as they get the authority in place where they have control, and under the KBRA, they will be given 50 years, if it's approved by Congress, they'll be given 50 years of funded, chartered authority that is unaccountable. They are non-elected members. They are created or chosen within their own council. And they are not locally represented by a majority, and most of them have no vested interest in the consequences of the decisions they make.
So in other words, they have a program. They will not have to live with the results of the program when this thing fails. They will not lose their livelihood. They will not have their property flooded. They will not. And then what's going to happen to the loss of electricity, of hydroelectric power?
Those dams provide electricity for over 70,000 homes. The reason that they put them in, it was one of the most secure, one of the most reliable, and one of the least expensive energy forms they've had. But they've utilized the relicensing of the dams. When they put them in 100 years ago, they set up a 50-year relicensing. On the first relicensing, there were some movements, preliminary, that I'm sure you're familiar with at that period of time, that people would like to have interfered. All of the people that were local, many of them were still alive that lived prior to the project and knew the pre-existing conditions. So there was no way that they would ever even consider have removed the dam. In fact, that's why it was determined that we needed the addition of Iron Gate Lake as well. And that, but this last relicensing, it was actually, that came up for 2006, they actually utilized that opportunity because so many other people, our area is huge. It is a massive area. Siskiyou County alone, which comprises, it contains the largest portion of the Klamath River itself, and three of the dams slated to be removed is about 5,200 square miles. I believe, if I'm correct, the fifth largest county in the state. And yet we only have like 42,000 people, maybe 44, I think, at last count. Our population has actually decreased from the 1800s. The area that we have is huge.
Hold that thought, because we're talking to Rex. Cazilio, we're talking about taking out the dams on the Klamath. He's pointing out, of course, that the rivers provide electricity for some 70,000 homes. Suddenly, the dams provide irrigation for the farms. The dams provide a prevention of flooding, suddenly, and the damages from flood control. And of course, the dams keep back the silt. If they don't keep that silt, of course, is released, it'll destroy the places where the salmon breed downriver. By doing this, of course, and I suppose this will actually influence the recreational activities in that area as well, won't it, Rex?
Oh, absolutely. With the dams, what they did is effectively separated some areas now that in the upper portion they actually have considered some of the highest world-class trout fishies for red band trout and that exist. The lakes themselves, which they decry the lakes, saying that they're shallow, warm water containments from the dams that are there, they're actually a minuscule fraction of the Upper Klamath Lake, and they are the deepest water in the entire Klamath. But they provide some of the highest class warm water fisheries that there are. Those fisheries, if they're removed, those species will be dumped into the Klamath, which ironically are predators to a lot of the salmon, the smolt, and eggs that come up. When they did Iron Gate Dam, they actually allowed for the hatchery to mitigate the few streams that even Fish and Game determined as marginal habitat for the most part between there and Spencer Creek. And as it turned out, the hatchery, because of the cold water that is not natural to the area, contributed by the lower depths of Iron Gate Lake, actually made one of the most reliable and most highly productive salmon hatchery in the country. In the entire region, they have produced millions of salmon that they've shipped out all over the world, as I understand it, and have contributed millions to the Klamath. At the time it was done, it was touted as being far more reliable in its production than the natural fisheries ever were before, when it was subject to drought and drying and inconsistent years. The hatchery is going to be, even though one of the reasons for removing it is saying that they have to restore the wild salmon that have been planted since the 1890s, in Coho, which is the spotted owl of the river right now. It works so well to shut down and devastate our region for the forest that they've chosen the Coho is the simile for that. That was never known to exist naturally in our portion of the river. Only through the plantings did it ever continue to exist historically that we're aware of, that anybody was aware of. But you speak of the tribes that and how they were brought in. Actually, the Shasta tribe, whose aboriginal lands are where the dams are now located in the largest part of the river, are against dams removal. They don't want those. They have burial sites underwater there. They don't want those exposed. They also know that the dams and the are beneficial to the area and environment, but they've been actually excluded from this entire process with their opinion. Only benefiting the seated tribal councils that are benefiting from the process are the ones who are going along with this as far as I can discern.
Well, did you ever stop to think this is specifically being done to destroy the economy of your area, to certainly destroy the agricultural base of your area, to destroy the fishing of your area, to destroy the recreational use of your area? Did you ever stop to think that these people know exactly what they're doing and they really want to destroy the society there? They're not simply misguided bureaucrats, but they're really evil and wicked people who are bent upon destruction. I mean, can you think of a better explanation for this? We can be benevolent and say, oh, they just don't know what they're doing. I think they obviously know what they're doing because they're doing the similar things all across America.
Well, sadly, I think that I can't escape anymore that this is an agenda-driven project. And I do believe that the Klamath is being used by the rejection consistently of both the science, the realities, and the history of the area. I can't conclude anything other than it is an agenda that is intended to rewild the region, to drive most of the people out, and to set in to conform to a new vision of the world. Unfortunately, what they are removing are the beneficial productions and assets that are necessary for survival. And in a balanced and sustainable system. The trouble is, the actions that they're taking are not sustainable.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back.
While the storm clouds gather all across the sea,
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, Kirk McKenzie's there. Kirk, is there anything you'd like to add or subtract from what's been said so far? Kirk is certainly one who lined up Rex with us. He's been patiently hanging on the line. Is there anything you wanted to add, Kirk?
Well, thanks for the opportunity. Actually, Rex is an eloquent spokesperson, and that's really why I wanted to get him on the show. The only thing I would say is that as an urban living person, I had a rare opportunity to actually go up there, not just drive through the freeway, but actually meet the people, understand the issues, and get involved with it. And from my perspective, this is not just an issue of a few ranchers or farmers. What this is happening across the nation, and we're talking about our food. You know, the rural areas of this country comprise most of the landmass, probably the smaller portion of the population. But this is where we get our food. And we get good, high-quality food from here versus some of the other emerging nations. This is where we get our water. This is where we get our energy. This is where we get our construction materials. In other words, this is the backbone of American prosperity. And I believe that we can't any longer just turn our backs on our relatives here, if you will, in the rural areas. We have to all work together and try and stop this madness from going on any further.
And I really believe it is. I don't believe it's madness at all. I think these people know exactly what they're doing. They just don't want us to understand. And this thing is all being done. Now, suddenly, Rex, what about the Congress? You know, have you talked to your congressmen? Have you talked to your senators? Have you tried to let them realize the disaster that lies ahead for your area? And suddenly destroy the agricultural base. They've already destroyed the lumber industry. Are they going to destroy the agricultural industry? Are they going to destroy the tourist industry? What else are they about to destroy by pursuing these insane goals and policies?
I actually, and let me say, please, up front, I make nothing from my position. In fact, all of the work that all of the people that I know of and myself regionally and there, I'm one of many locals who all feel the same way, who have dedicated themselves trying to inform the public and let them know what's going on, largely to no avail because media won't support it. We make nothing for our positions. We are not paid for the position, unlike most of the proponents that we've heard that actually are promoting this continually. I have, at our own expense, have gone back and spoken to congressmen and legislators in Washington. I've gone up and testified at the Senate subcommittee.
Hold that thought. Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment with the... Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Rex is simply talking about the thing that he and the other people involved are suddenly trying to get the word out. And he's been to Washington, D.C. He's talked to various committees. He's trying to get the word out so people will understand what's going on. But, of course, you're not going to hear about this with the controlled media. The media as a whole in America is controlled by five major corporations. We're talking about AOL, Time Warner. We're talking about Bertelsmann. We're talking about Viacom, we're talking about Disney, we're talking about GE and Fox. They control the major media and largely determine what the American people think. Well, certainly, it's such a vitally important information. Rex, you have certainly a website, a telephone number, any means by which people can get in touch with you that would like more information. What was anything you'd like to put out at this time?
Okay. I think it's vitally important both for people to contact their congressmen and congresswomen to try and notify them of and help share the recognition of this and say, please don't endorse the signing of the agreements and the removal potential of the dams, Secretary of Interior decisions. And also, we'll try and put links. If you could have links to we'll try and get them established to Kurt's website. Yes, sir.
Yeah, I actually have started a new website. So if you go to defendruralamerica.com, defendruralamerica.com, it's just getting off the ground, but you can go ahead and get there, get initial contact point, and shortly there's going to be quite a bit of content there to help to kind of organize this defense, if you will.
All right, fine. Somebody called in. Rex, and suggested that you get in touch with Bill Wattenberg. He's at KGO in San Francisco. And Wattenberg is really a very, very brilliant fellow, and he's really got a man, one of the few people in the media today I really have a great deal of respect for. It might not be a bad idea to call KGO and to try to find out his email site or get to him and tell him what the problem is and see if we can get onto his program. And if he would take this up, because this is a vitally important issue. Remember, Chris, no man is an island. If this destroys you and your area there, it's going to have an impact on us, and it's going on all across America. We have listeners all across America, I'm sure, who can tell similar stories, but certainly right now you're on the front lines of this as they move to tear out the four dams there on the Klamath River. So Ben Wattenberg has been suggested. He does a good job. Brian Sussman, who's at KSFO in San Francisco, Oakland does a good job as well. So there are these people in the media that might very well be willing to help, and we'll certainly want to get you, Rex, onto our other programs. We have programs all across America. We're not primarily California, although we have five, hopefully very soon, six stations here in California where we do have an opportunity to get information out. But, Rex, you go right ahead. You said that you've actually testified. Was that state senate or was that the United States senate that you testified before?
The testimony was up in Oregon at the Oregon State Senate Subcommittee, and that was regarding Senate Bill 76, which actually gave Oregon's authority to proceed with raising the public utility rates in order to pay for dams removals from the Oregon ratepayers, which is one of the travesties that's happened. When we were talking about the dams relicensing, in the FERC process, which is a Federal Energy Relicensing Regulatory Commission, what they did when they went to relicense, a number of these groups who belonged to these same seated agreements that we talked about had submitted actually worked in concert with each other and had submitted requirements or recommendations to the Energy Relicensing Committee in order to increase the cost for so-called mitigations, many of which had nothing to do with the dam's existence, like recreational development for the millions of dollars for ATV trails, things which they would normally have actually and are fighting against. They were calling for millions of dollars in so-called mitigations in an attempt, including requiring no other or allowing no other option than a fish ladder that they figured would cost in excess of $300 to $400 million, making the entire operation of the dams economically unfeasible. That's what forced Pacific Power into these agreements that they're allowing to allow for removals. Unfortunately, with those relicensing requirements, even if the agreement does not go through, which throws the burden of all of these costs onto ratepayers and taxpayers, $2.5 billion by the time, because the KBRA is an intrinsic part of that agreement. So they're looking at nearly $500 million for removal of the dams by the most conservative estimate, and that's basically what they call a blow and go. They'll blow a hole in them and let things run, which they absolutely denied years ago. And when I said that, and others said that's exactly what they'll come to, now that's what they're condoning. The $2 billion is $1 billion for promise for the KBRA oversight prior to dams removals, and then they expect another $1 billion after that. Those costs are all unrepresented being thrown onto the taxpayers and the ratepayers in these so-called meetings. If Congress approves that, the cost for the dams, whether they exist, whether the secretary fines for keeping them or simply supporting the KBRA and all of the mitigation, so-called, are going to be huge for the population. We cannot afford, well, won't be able to afford the price increases that are already starting. They say that
you're talking about the price increases in electricity or what?
All of the above. Electricity is a huge one. Much of agriculture will be devastated in the upper basin from the loss of their low-cost power that were original contractual provisions from the agreement I told you about between the project and the dam's operation in the early days. But those power increases alone have already shown to be huge, and they've only just begun. The so-called cap to the increase for dams removal is a feint. What they're doing, the other portion of SB 76 in Oregon that went through, passes on all of the costs of mitigation for the dams being taken out, for environmental protections, for fish hatchery replacement in Tiram if they can't, because the Iron Gate won't be able to operate without the artificially cold water produced by the dam. All of those mitigations are passed directly through the PUC under Bill 76 with no option for opposition except to the state Supreme Appellate Court. Those kind of provisions are being put in and snuck into the people, passing the cost on to ratepayers and taxpayers that are going to be horrendous. And under their conditions and agreements, once they get congressional approval, those are cast in stone. Even if the dams and the disaster of removal that they would cause don't occur, the requirements of the agreements for the so-called mitigations, water quality and the hierarchy I spoke of earlier, will all be put into place, and that will also just as much devastate the community in the region that we know of and increase the cost.
Well, it's a pretty sad picture that you're painting there. What sort of response did you get from the legislators in Oregon when you presented the difficulty that's coming? The amount of money you're talking about could certainly devastate the people living where you are. There's only, 40,000 already? I would think that more and more people would move out as the cause of the basic utilities and electricity would increase. Either that or the people would begin to put in solar and other things that the so there'd be less demand for electricity, which, of course, even make it more expensive. They're still going to certainly... basically, everything they do is just going to complicate life, and there's no problem facing America that a new series of government regulations won't make worse. And this seems to me like it's just going to totally destroy the economy of your region. Do you have this impression?
I see no other alternative. 30 years ago, we've been through it before. That's the trouble. And that's the part that's most disconcerting. We are seeing an exact repetition of what we saw 30 years ago. With the spotted owl issue, they shut down the forest. And when they were doing that, we were saying, and making all of their promises of, oh, the tourism is going to increase, you're going to save so many hundreds for every tree that's saved, going to be wonderful. And we're saying we have a sustainable, vibrant economy with more trees now than there were historically, that they can be managed extremely well, and had been done for a very long time. In fact, it was government agencies we had some of the most difficulties with for sustainability. But what we said at the time was, if you shut down the forest, you're going to end up with burning all of the resources and wasting all the resources that we have in the region. In 20 years, you're going to see the place devastated. You're going to see massive erosion, air pollution. We're going to lose the resources we have for the future and to several hundred years of burning, recycled of burning brush. And that's exactly what has happened. The only benefit we could see at the time was that we'd say, well, when we lost, and they said we shut it down anyway. Well, when that comes about and we start and this devastation starts happening, at least we can say we told you so. They'll regain their common sense and they'll put us back to the condition. Instead, many of those same players today have altered the history of what's occurred, blamed the policies that took place almost 30 years ago and are claiming that a global warming is causing it. We're now breathing the smoke of the devastation they called, and many of those same players have simply moved to the mouth of the Klamath and are now taking on the new objective of rewilding the Klamath.
Well, I think, of course, there is a program. It's called Agenda 21. I don't know if you're acquainted with it, but the whole idea is to rewild the planet and to destroy contemporary civilization. When you understand that, it all makes sense. They want to bring back the grizzly bears. They want to bring back the mountain lions. They want to bring back the wolves. They want to move them into areas where people live, make them endangered so that, of course, people will be frightened and will tend to move out of those areas. It doesn't make any sense, but so much of what's going on doesn't make any sense. It is simply that there are people who have a different worldview, because I think that they have a whole different objective in life. Have you looked into this whole idea of wilding or rewilding certain areas of the wilderness?
Unfortunately, if you had asked me 20 years ago, I'd have said, oh no, that can't be such a conspiracy. But through all of the involvement and the progression that's taken place, and the information that I've garnered since. Unfortunately, I've gone to the websites for the UN for Dr. Reed Noss, who's one of the major proponents in the U.S., the agendas, the monies that were funneled into the various agencies. And sadly, we are seeing that in our region. The amount of money being poured into creating this agenda is, in our region at least, this direction in our region is huge. And, of course, we're a very poor area, so we can muster little opposition. I've had many of the groups tell us that environmental groups and other proponents involved that this is a precedent-setting case. If they figured we have minimal opposition we can muster in the area, and if they can establish that precedent here, they can move that to other areas within the rest of the nation.
Well,
I don't doubt that's possible.
Well, now, what about your congressman? Is your congressman doing anything at all? Is he just sitting on his hands and going right along with it?
Unfortunately, this is my personal perception. I think there is growing awareness of what is happening, but up until this place, the total political impetus for this has been for promoting this so-called agreement basis. These are... a number of very powerful agencies and groups that have a great deal of funding that are supporting this so-called community agreement. And because the majority of people, Siskiyou County, the almost 80% of the population of Siskiyou County just voted against removal of the dams, and yet you don't see that in the media. And you don't see that being put out when they're saying that they have these agreements endorsed by the majority of all interest groups involved. That's nonsense. The local people, it is a very small minority that actually appear to be in agreement with this, and almost everyone that I've run across who is involved with that is personally benefiting by virtue of those agreements. That the money involved is huge, but ironically, where they're claiming it's going to be money coming to the area that's going to create jobs and a resurgence has also been experienced before in many other systems, and even recently with so-called islands that were built to the tune of $4.2 million, where the biggest benefit regionally was, I believe, in the article, they hired three local people and they attended a charity barbecue, and we're claiming the benefits of that. That's the kind of thing we're going to see with the money, so-called, that happens. In fact, the agencies that are setting the requirements and the regulations for the so-called restoration and water quality improvement are requiring so many, a barrage of so many permits, and, of course, with recent legislation that was put through, those agencies who basically write and review their own regulations, proposed regulations, now have the ability to charge the fees and fines correlated with that upon the people, the landowners, to supposedly benefit by the oversight. Unfortunately, the requirements that they are going for are so generically adverse to the specialized local conditions, they will be detrimental. In our personal experience on the river, many of the things that they are going to require under those conditions are an antithesis to the benefit of the region, but they're mandates under the requirements, and we have to pay thousands and thousands of dollars for those who can afford to do it. It's those people, the local people cannot afford those conditions, and the environment will suffer because of it. We're already seeing that happen with many of the conditions that they've imposed.
I'm sure you're absolutely right. And the great tragedy is most people have no idea what's going on. We actually certainly have our sympathy, and I think the sympathy of many of our listeners. We have a large listener base. Once again, let's get your website out there so people would know how to get in touch with you.
It's defendingruralamerica.com.
Defendingruralamerica.com.
Ruralamerica.
If you have a chance, give Rex go to the website, contact him. Get everything, do everything you can to help the truth out.
Thank you so much.
Well, it's certainly a pleasure to have you with us. Keith, Kirk, did you have anything to say before we let the both of you go?
Just final thought, you know, everybody needs to engage in this. It is the backbone of our nation. I'm sitting here looking at a map, and there's a map of all the planned dam removals across this country with a number of 836 that have already been removed, and this map is like two or three years old. So this is progressing, and it is progressing across the nation. So what's happening there is just a microcosm of what's happening across our entire nation.
I'm sure this is true. Basically, ladies and gentlemen, this is a nationwide program. America is not under attack from the terrorists from without. It is under attack from the terrorists from within, people who pose as environmentalists, so concerned there about the fishies, so concerned about the spotted owl, so concerned about the grizzly bears and the mountain lions and the wolves, and we wanting to rewild, I think, our society. Bring these predators, these carnivores, and plant them in civilized areas to drive people off the ground, out of rural areas, and drive them into urban areas where they can be watched and monitored. People don't understand. We're dealing with people who have a different agenda, and until we can get the information out, get people to read Agenda 21, get them to read the Global Biodiversity Assessment, you get the summary in my Sustainable Development Syllabus, get them to read the Earth Charter and certainly the message on the Georgia Guidestone. Certainly it's an excellent book written by our good friend Arlene Kula called By Stealth and Deception. That's By Stealth and Deception. We carry the book. You need to get the book. You need to read it. Parting thought, Rex, before we let you go.
Well, thank you so much for the voice. I can tell you that in all of these years, it has been very hard to get the word out to the public, and you offer a tremendous opportunity for doing that. We very much appreciate it.
Well, we're very glad to be able to do that. Parting thought for you as well, Kirk, before we let you go.
Well, I think we've covered it all. We're going to have, you know, future shows. You want to talk about those?
Well, no, we have one tomorrow night, and who's going to be the guest?
Danielle Lindler.
Danielle Lindler will be.
And right, so, and that next week we're going to talk about what's the impact on the suction dread miners. And then one I haven't talked to you about, but I have confirmed if we can do this, is the sheriff up in Siskiyou County is helping to defend these people's rights. Sheriff John Lopey has agreed to be on the show.
All right, fine. Well, we'll talk to you later. Give me a call. God bless you both. Thanks very much for being with us. Good night.
Thank you. Good night.
Okay, fine. Well, this is Dr. Stan. We do hope you enjoyed the program with Rex Cazalio and, of course, with Kirk McKenzie. We're trying to get the information out. We want you to get involved. We want you to tell others about the program. You can get these programs on our internet site. They're certainly archived at radiodivity.com. Pull them down. Copy them. You can always buy them from us, but why do that when you could pull them down for nothing from our internet site? And all of our programs are certainly archived there for 6 months. Find me for 6 weeks. Get them, pull them down, and then help us get the word out. And then, of course, we do hope if you're a member of our listening audience and you're in a position to help, that you'll join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, because this is how we're able to maintain our network of over 65 stations every single week. We're sometime across, at some point during that week, somewhere across America, people are hearing the truth that is being blocked out by the Brotherhood of Darkness because of their control over the mass media. But fortunately, we do have a voice, and if you'd like to become part of that voice, our number, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927, our webpage, radioliberty.com. Now, this is the point. I just want to remind you, we're having an all-day conference here in the Monterey Bay area on the 23rd of October, and if you're in a position to come, we hope you can make it. We're going to have great speakers. We're going to have Rosalind Peterson talking on geoengineering, and she's certainly the expert on that. We're having Betty Martini. She's going to be talking about how they're poisoning our children with aspartame. They call it NutraSweet. It's in the children's chewing gum. It's in the children's medication. It's certainly so many of the things that the children use, the children's candy, Mars candy bars, they put it in there knowing full well it's a deadly poison, and certainly it destroys fertility, it predisposes to cancer. They know what they're doing, ladies and gentlemen. They know that this is a deadly poison. And as Betty Martini was told by a high-ranking FDA official when she asked, why are you doing this? He said there are too many people in the world. It's about population control. Because we've said this for a long period of time. If you haven't heard my talk on planned population reduction, it's a DVD well worthwhile getting. That's planned population reduction. We have another DVD called Nandare Call It Genocide. Nandare Call It Genocide. They're both available by calling 1-800-544-8927. We also have something called, it's a monograph you get on the internet. It's called The Population Control Agenda. Go up on the internet. Go up on the internet and simply type in Population Control Agenda. Put in my name, Radio Liberty. Or you don't even have to. You'll be able to pull it down. Or if you get anything from us, ask for a free copy. We'll send it to you. You have our permission to copy this, to get it out, to get it disseminated. We are involved in a battle for the very survival of Christian civilization. There really are people out there who intend to kill off billions of people. They've already killed approximately 2 billion people. They've already killed approximately 2 billion people. They're killing millions of people every day, and they intend to kill billions more. They openly talk about killing over 90% of the world's population. If you've never been to see the Georgia Guidestones or read about them, you can read about them at my website, radioliberty.com. In fact, most of the pictures that you'll see on the internet of the Georgia Guidestones are our pictures, pictures I've taken. So get the information, help us to get it out. We're not talking about something imaginary. These are vicious people who really do intend to kill off the majority of the people in the world. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927, our webpage, radioliberty.com. Go there and look at the items we have, the DVDs, the videos, the books, the certainly the four tape sets, the four CD sets, and then certainly listen to our programs, read our newsletters, and then please pray for America. Pray for revival, but pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until tomorrow evening, we'll be back with you once again. Dr. Stan, good night, and may the Lord be with you.
Let us all be grateful.